You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, 901 on ESPN 97.5. Mark Schlebach is going to be joining us here. He wrote a story about, man, oh, man, you want to talk about Armageddon. If it doesn't happen in college football, the financial toll of coronavirus could cost college football at least $4 billion, and it's already cost in sports. Cincinnati has dropped its men's soccer program. Old Dominion cut wrestling. Furman shut down baseball and lacrosse. Bowling Green cut baseball. Central Michigan terminated men's track and field. Akron announced eliminating men's cross country, men's golf, and women's tennis.
This is after 2 months.
Right. And, well, you're here at that school, or they're eliminated?
Well, it's after 2 months that's been done. Imagine what happens imagine what happens if fall doesn't jump off.
Well, you
no
notice,
students,
though,
no
here, and look at these schools, Cincinnati, Old Dominion, Furman, Central Michigan, Akron, Bowling Green. I mean, it's mid-level college football. And college football, while it still is boss and it generates all the money, it doesn't generate enough to not have it. And even right now, it doesn't generate enough to save those programs. The big schools, Michigan, Ohio State, LSU, Alabama, they're, you know what? They can probably hold it off. They can probably hold it off. But you're going to eliminate a bunch of non-revenue sports at smaller schools if this doesn't go down, if we don't have a college football season.
Yeah, I think you could eliminate some at bigger schools, too, of non-revenue sports, especially if you start to see students aren't allowed to come in for the fall semester. And I think it's going to be a little sharper than people think when you talk about how, because most of these athletic departments depend on either basketball, but for the most part, college football. They are massive, because with college football comes not just the gate, but also, more importantly, the TV deals.
Yeah.
And the ability for remember that the conferences share a lot of revenue that comes in from, you know, BCS bowls and bowl games and things like that. There's also shared revenue that takes place as well. So we saw University of Houston, as we mentioned, the AD, the head coach in both basketball and football, took 10% reductions. Childish Altuve said, give us an update on Dana, John. How's he doing now that he's one of the poors? Where can we donate? Hashtag Dana Strong. That's not, I think he's fine, even at 10%. He's going to be fine at 10%. And then he followed up with, I'm just going to think these aren't true. He said, I just saw Dana at Kolache Factory. He was working there. WTF. Hashtag coronavirus. Hashtag Dana Strong. John, that, you can confirm that is
none
not
of that is true. Dana's fine. He's going to be fine. Childish Altuve.
Honestly.
We can stop. We're not having a hashtag Dana Strong.
Yeah, you don't have to, because Dana's a self-starter. I saw him standing in the parking lot of a Home Depot.
No, you did not.
Waiting along with others to do day work. So Dana
didn't see him sprint out to somebody's pickup truck that pulled over on a gas station near 59.
He thought he should be. I was listening to the conversation. He thought he should be paid more because he can be a translator between the contractor and the day workers. Dana's bilingual, apparently. At least that's what he told the guy. So Dana's a self-starter. Don't you worry about Dana.
He's not at a Home Depot.
Dana is not at a Home Depot. So let me ask you this. This doesn't happen often. Kentucky basketball, Kentucky football, which generates more?
I mean, I would think it would be Kentucky basketball, but because of the amount of people in the stands, of course, there's also fewer dates, home dates. I'm going to say Kentucky basketball.
Yep, barely. And it's one of the rare. It's 19-5. In 2006, this is 2016. They brought in 19-5 in ticket sales, while the football team generated 16-4. That's in ticket sales. But as far as what the two, I mean, Duke, 2015, ticket sales, remarkably, Kentucky football brought in $16.4 million, while basketball brought in $19.5 million. And then the difference in the television contracts, Kentucky football is much more valuable. And that's at Kentucky. I would imagine Kansas isn't much different. Football is by far king.
Yeah, Kansas is going to be a clear. Yeah, Kansas is going to be clearly ahead. I would think North Carolina too.
Yeah,
I would think. I would think Duke.
Well, what do you mean ahead? As far as not as far as revenues. I'm going to take the football teams on all of them because of the television contracts. Now. Ticket sales, yes.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess
ticket sales, yes, but television contracts going to be night and day.
Yeah, they're all part of the same conference, I guess. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, Here is University of Kentucky. 2013 said they generated $27.6 million in revenue in football, spending $9.5 million. By comparison, men's basketball, even off a national championship, produced $20 million, which is $7 million less, and they spent more. That's what football does. Even at Kentucky, that was in 2012 and 2013, when they really sucked at football, because they had a little bit of a resurgence of late. But it's night and day. And if you don't have that football revenue, and I've asked even when University of Houston had their in Kelvin Sampson's years here. What Kelvin Sampson is doing, it's still night and day what football brings in. Still night and day. And that's in the American, which their football contract is so-so.
That's the American, and that's why college football is going to have to be played. And the Pac-12 can – I get it. I certainly understand the concerns or whatever the case may be, and certainly there's a loss of revenue if people are not in the stands. Mark Schlabach is on right now.
Yep, we got him.
Oh, let's bring him on right now. Mark joins us, the author of the article that we're talking about on ESPN. And Mark, we've been talking about this for quite some time about the revenue, how it had to be played. We've heard numbers, just general numbers. Your article was the first one that I saw where you actually put real fact finding together with actual numbers of revenue that has been lost, that will be lost. And I think what is at stake, not just for college football, but maybe more importantly for athletic programs and universities around the country, if college football is not able to go for 1 year.
Yeah, no, I mean the numbers are staggering and chilling. I mean, $4 billion if a season isn't played, at least $4.1 billion, $1.6 billion in ticket sales, if fans aren't in the stands, and that's kind of understated because, in the SEC and Big 12 and some other places, donations are tied to those tickets. People have to pay thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars, just for the right and opportunity to purchase those tickets. And, I don't know. I'm sure there are some alumni and boosters out there that would just say keep the donation, but a lot of people are going to expect that money back. So, I think for the Power Five, seasons played without fans, they're going to be able to recoup a lot of money from the TV revenue, the media rights packages, and then you would assume if fans aren't in the stands that the ratings would be through the roof, so advertising dollars and corporate sponsorships and those sort of things would probably be intact as well. But, for the non-Power Five teams, I think the average media rights contract was about $842,000. So it's just with 130 Division I FBS teams out there, the economic models for each athletic department really varies. And some schools rely on the conference, distributions from TV and FBS, college football playoff, the Power Five especially, but for other smaller schools and lower levels, it's ticket revenue and corporate sponsorships and whatnot, and that's going to be impacted mightily.
This weekend, Mark Schlabach is with us here, ESPN writer, talking about college football. This weekend, the Michigan president said, we're not playing if there are no students in. LeBron said he wasn't playing if there were no fans in the stands either, and now look at him. If every other Big Ten school is out there, if every other Big Ten school is playing and Michigan is going to say, no, we're not going to play, I just don't see it happening, Mark.
Well, I mean, I think if a school like Michigan were to say we're not going to do it, I don't think the Big Ten can do it. Look, we don't know what's the environment's going to be like at the beginning of September, early, late August, when these decisions are going to have to be made. But, I think, there's going to be a regionality to it. I think the SEC seems hell-bent on playing football this fall. But I think other parts of the country, California, New Jersey, New York, there's still some skepticism about, what's going to happen. I think people are hopeful, but, I don't know that it's going to be the same in every part of the country. That's the problem. The problem with college football is you've got 130 FBS programs in 49 states. So, it's not like the NBA or Major League Baseball where you're only dealing with teams in 32 cities or 30 teams or whatever.
So you don't think if Michigan plays, the Big Ten won't play?
I mean, I think everybody I've talked to for the last 6 to 8 weeks, they're putting the right smile on. They're saying that there's, that all the Power Five leagues are working together. It's going to be a unanimous decision. But then I guarantee, I had one SEC coach tell me a couple of weeks ago, the governor of California is not going to dictate whether or not the SEC plays football this fall.
Right.
And I think from a conference standpoint, I think if Michigan's a holdout and, a couple other schools are holdouts, I think it'd be difficult for conferences to play.
It's really, I think but the one thing that we have to acknowledge is that the real truth that we've had from, from late in February into March when a lot of the shelter in place started taking place, Mark, is that this has been a whirling dervish of new information and changes in protocol and understanding. And the CDC came out and said, okay, well, look, you probably have a much lower percentage chance than we initially thought with contacting coronavirus on, grocery bags and things like that. I don't blame them. You're learning stuff new. This is brand new. We're sitting here in May, the back end of May. We still have June and July to go, and then you're into August. So things could change drastically in 6 to 8 weeks. However, the process of getting everything ready is taking place now. Even if things change drastically, let's say in 6 to 8 weeks, if they don't already have that an understanding of that's how it's supposed to work, then what they're going to do, are they going to be able to really get football started in certain areas if they're not ready to do it right now?
Yeah, no, I think you've got to have plans in place. Every time somebody makes a decision, for instance, when the California State University system announced that it wasn't going to have students back on its 23 campuses, people were like, why are you making this decision now? Well, there are 481,000 students in the California State University system. And if you're going to go online only, you got to have professors and faculties and IT people working on preparing online classes for 481,000 students. And if, I agree with you. There's so much that we don't know. There's so much that's going to take place in June and July. Everybody I've talked to, from the NCAA to conference commissioners to athletic directors and medical people, believe that the testing is going to be better and more widespread available by August, September, and they're not going to be taking away testing from hospitals and other places that need it right now. But, we don't know if there is going to be a second spike. Everybody I've talked to says they feel good about August, September, October. They're worried about November because that's the regular flu season. That's when this thing typically, viruses like this typically spike for a second time. And I think that's why you've seen a lot of schools like South Carolina, Notre Dame, and others, shorten the fall semester in classes before November or before Thanksgiving, and then bring kids back in January where you can make a decision to go online in January. But I think we're going to play football in some form or fashion. I don't think we're going to see 100,000 people in stadiums.
No, I agree, Mark. Mark Schlabach with us here, ESPN writer on ESPN 97.5. Is there a scenario, let's say L.A. still shut down, because they're going to be shut down, I guess, through July. Is there a scenario where USC and UCLA go and travel somewhere and get ready for the football season?
Yeah, I mean, that could be a possibility. You know, when we've got all these schools saying they plan to have on-campus instruction in the fall, and then those decisions won't be made, you know, for another month or so. You know, I don't know. I think if you bring back student-athletes and don't bring back students, I actually think, let's say a university like the University of Wisconsin goes online only but brings back student-athletes, I think you have a better chance of keeping the virus out of your athletic department and football team if they're not out mingling with other students and in classes. So, you know, it could be a difficult decision for a lot of people. But getting back to the financial part of it, look, if we don't have football, about half of FBS is going out of business. I mean, there's only 41% of FBS programs, Power 5 programs, that even have money and emergency funds, you know, set up for crisis like this. You know, for the past 15 years, it's been spend money as quick as you get it on coaching contracts and support staffs and upgrade facilities and things like that, because if you've got money in the bank, guess what? You've got enough money to pay the student-athletes. So it's a lot of schools are in tough shape, and not just the lower division schools and group of five. There's some Power 5 schools that are going to be in big trouble regardless if the season's even played. Washington State, Rutgers, UCF, schools like that that rely on support from their universities, direct institutional support, that money's not going to be there. These university systems are losing hundreds of millions of dollars between now and the end of the year.
I guarantee you people have not taken this seriously and have not thought about the ramifications. Because that's been on my mind this whole time is we are a paycheck to paycheck nation in every regard, including college athletics. And as you just mentioned, I mean, that's jarring to hear that FBS programs going out of business, but that's a very, very real possibility. I want to ask you though, I think college coaching contracts obviously are out of control. And I think the resetting of the contract model has really caused a problem. That really is a light's being shined on it right now. Is there any chance that this pandemic and the threat of a future pandemic or this one lasting for a while, is there any chance that that will now cause colleges and universities to reconsider how they operate in terms of coaching salaries and in terms of how they operate from a spending standpoint?
Yeah, no, I think it's a complete reset. I think coaching contracts are going to be examined. I mean, obviously, anything that's on paper and signed right now, you're going to have a hard time renegotiating those things. But I think in the future, schools are probably going to be a little more patient with coaches that are losing. I mean, you look at Florida State. Florida State's been in financial trouble for several years and just paid Willie Taggart $18 million to go away. If you go back to, I don't have the exact figure in front of me, but if you go back to when Charlie Weiss was fired at Notre Dame and they paid him that huge buyout, I think the FBS programs have spent more than $300 million on buyouts to make guys go away and not coach. I mean, it's insanity. I think these support staffs have gotten really bloated over the last few years with analysts and GAs and everything else. I think those are going to get smaller. I think the football facilities with the slides at Clemson and the water fountain in Alabama's locker room, I think I just think across the board, everything's going to be closely looked at and whether or not it's essential and basic. And, Nick Saban has told me the last 4 or 5 years that at some point it was going to get to where there were 50 to 65 throwing out numbers. About that number of FBS teams, they're going to be playing in their own division, playing each other, nobody else, because schools like South Alabama, Tulane, Georgia Southern, Georgia State don't need to be trying to compete at the FBS level. It's not financially prudent. It's not responsible. And I think we could get to where there's another division below the group, the Power Five, and a separate division of like group of five schools where they're playing for their own national championship. I think we'll get closer to that scenario because so many of these schools are going to be in financial peril.
I've asked about that to the coaches at the non-Power Five, and they are obviously totally against it because they want to be considered that they're coaching at the highest level as opposed to a step down. So I think that'll be difficult for I don't know. I think if coaches and staffs have anything to say about it with the presidents, I think that there's going to be some pushback on that, Mark.
They may not have a choice though, because they're not going to have the money. I think it's going to be tough, and I do think from a non-football standpoint, we're already seeing it. You've got all these Big 12 schools flying all over the country to play women's tennis and men's golf and baseball. And I mean, why should West Virginia be flying to Texas nine times a semester, you know, to play series against other Big 12 schools in Oklahoma and Texas and Iowa? It doesn't make sense from a financial standpoint. And I think we're going to see more of that as well.
More regional as opposed to conference?
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it's a shame how many teams have already been cut. I mean, across the country. I just saw East Carolina dropped, I think, four or five programs. Cincinnati dropped its soccer program. Alabama Huntsville just dropped its men's hockey team, which was the only men's hockey program south of the Mason-Dixon line. It was a storied tradition in history. It got dropped on Friday. Bowling Green, I think, dropped its baseball program, and I think you're going to see more and more of it.
Yep. Mark Schlabach with us here on ESPN 97.5. The article is Financial Toll of Coronavirus Could Cost College Football at Least $4 Billion on ESPN. Man, good stuff. We appreciate it. A lot of research and a lot of, I would imagine, time-consuming for you. Good stuff, and we appreciate you taking time to hang with us.
Thank you. Let me say one last thing. I hope we play college football.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I mean, I nobody wants college football played more than me. And I hope it gets played and everybody gets to play and people can get back into the stadiums and everything. But like I said, there's just so much we don't know right now.
Absolutely. No, we're with you on that one. We're with you on that. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Yep, thanks for having me, guys. Have a great week. Thank you.
All right.
Appreciate it.
In the meantime, we've got to get some insurance on this whole deal, Lance.
TGS Insurance can insure you and yours if college football isn't played, but what they can do is insure you for your home. And that's what you're worried about most right now is making sure that you've got your homeowner's insurance ready for hurricane season. That's obviously very, very important. But what else is very, very important is making sure that you're getting it at a good price. You don't have to cut back on – look, you may be cutting back on different things right now to make ends meet in your home, but why don't you keep an A-rated insurance company and pay a lot less? And that's what's happening with TGS Insurance. They aggregate a number of underwriters that are A-rated, and then they find the lowest possible rate for you with the great service and obviously the A-rated coverage. And then from there, you have a chance to save. In many cases, it's up into the thousands. $1,000-$2,000 is not unusual. The average savings is $900. So obviously you're going to have some lower, but you're going to have some much higher as well. TGS Insurance says, hey, who knows where you're going to fall here on this wheel of savings? All you have to do to spin it is text money to 232323. That's money to 232323 or go to tgsinsurance.com.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5, 929, 713-780-3776 if you want to get in here. The one thing I disagree with Mark about, Lance, is the Michigan thing. If Michigan decides it's not going to play, but the rest of the Big Ten is going to play, you know what Ohio State's going to say? Well, screw you. I don't care. You go ahead, Michigan. And Alabama ain't going to be stopped if Auburn says we ain't playing. Guess what? Then don't play, Auburn. Good. Because you guys are a bunch of wusses, so don't play.
Oh, well, first of all, why are you bringing SEC into this? There's not one SEC school that's not going to play.
Yeah, I could see where Vanderbilt might, or
you want to keep getting that check, Vandy?
Yeah. Well, Big Ten gets a bigger check than anybody. Their TV deal with ESPN is $440 million a year, and then that's on their Big Ten. Holy crap!
Well, you heard
ridiculous.
How he amended it and said if there are other holdouts too, one school is not going to stop a conference.
No, and I multiple schools might not. I could see where three schools not playing. Oh, well, we're going to go on with it.
Might not, but you may end up having a 9-game season for some teams because it may be hard to get anybody on the schedule. You know what I mean? Like other people have schedules too already set up.
Right, but the payday that you get playing in Michigan or playing in Ohio State, they'll take care of that.
Well, yeah, but you don't have an opening in your schedule right now unless
other teams don't play openings in their schedules, which we've already seen is happening,
happening. Yeah, because you could see Arizona State all of a sudden playing Ohio State or Arizona State playing, you know, whoever's supposed. But if you have, let's say, Indiana, Northwestern, and Michigan, let's say three teams, well, then there's three teams potentially who you're going to have to fill all those games for all those Big 12 teams, Big 10 teams that were supposed to play them. You would have to fill those in with other teams. So it would be a little tricky, but once again.
Or you're playing an 11-game season this year. Oh, if it's impossible, and you know what you do, you play an 11-game season.
Yeah, and that's possible too.
Right. Longhorn Keith wants to get in on the show. What do you say, Longhorn Keith?
Hey, good morning, fellas. Man, what a great interview! And John, I agree with you on the Michigan thing. I don't think that people would be sitting out because Michigan chooses to sit out, but. Something that stuck out to me, and Lance, you raised a great question because I was thinking the same thing as he was speaking, and that is, one, I'd be devastated if there's no college football, obviously, this fall. But yes, he brought up the question of college coaches' contracts. And for years I've questioned whether or not was this a sustainable model for certain schools, but I knew that certain schools had to do it to maintain with other schools. And then to hear all of these programs just being shut down as a result of just 2 months. And then as you asked, like, this is just after 2 months of you know, our country being closed. And so to a greater degree, I'm worried now that college programs have put themselves in situations, and certainly not so much the bigger schools, the Power Fives, but certainly other schools who try to keep up now are going to have to suffer some greater consequences, and not just from the standpoint of athletics, but academics as well, because I don't see how this model is going to be able to keep up throughout the country, as he mentioned, 130 FBS programs. How that's going to be able to be maintained? I'm really concerned about overall in general, because when you got kids who, let's face it, man, listen, just to get onto a college team, whether through a scholarship or walk on, whatever the case may be, and to continue what you're passionate about, and not be able to do that, and now you're trying to search for schools like Central Michigan, losing its track. I mean, those are all devastating things for young men, young women who are in their, 18, 19, 20 years old. So it's a really, I think it, I didn't never think about it from this cyclical standpoint, but now it's really starting to hit home that how impactful in 2 months and going on three that this has changed the landscape of everything. So thank you guys for the great interview.
Appreciate it, Longhorn Keaton. Thanks for calling in too. So, John, this is, this really is going to be hard. If there's a long-lasting vibe to this where people are going to have at least concern in the future, it really could change the way college contracts are. And it may not be for the top guys, but I think something that Mark said makes a lot of sense. This quick two-and-done ideology and this one-and-done stuff where you already feel like a guy's not the guy, look – if you sign a guy to a contract now, you may not have the money to buy the guy out. So a 5-year contract may start meaning 4 years.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how you're going to, unless you have a salary cap, because, listen, football means so much. If Nick Saban or Dabo are out on the market, teams will, the universities will spend, they'll go through the roof.
And John, you might know better than most. Are those coaches' contracts being bought out and paid for just strictly a university thing, or is that money being funneled in from boosters who are like, the big money people are like, you know what? I'm done with watching Willie Taggart coach my team. Let's get the money together to get him out of here. Like, isn't that a booster thing? Now, boosters may, they're in the economy too, and they may face some questions about where they want to spend their money. But I always thought that the big money decisions came from the big money, not just money that runs through the program.
Everybody's different, I think. Like, again, I'll go back to LSU. Everything goes through TAF, and all the coaches' salaries, all the expenses for the football team has absolutely nothing to do with the university, but that's how it was set up. It was explained to me by Chris Pesman is that you can set up your finances differently. You can set up your finances differently, and they did it right to begin with, and now it's hard to go back and change stuff. But, yeah, I think that, yeah, if a booster says, let's get rid of that guy, okay, how much you got? How much you going to pay off on that? I'll give you $5 million of it. Okay,
yeah, that's,
then let's do it.
That's I was listening to a podcast, and that's allegedly the story how Willie Taggart lost his job right after the blowout loss to Miami. It's like the booster's like, all right, this isn't going well. We've had enough. Let's make a move. Let's get on the open market quickly and before everybody else. So it wasn't like the university president AD had a conversation and scrambled this money together. The big money people who fund that place were like, all right, we've seen enough. Let's cut the checks to get him out of here. And they had the money to get him out of there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, that's still, I think that is absolutely going to be, that is absolutely going to continue. I just don't see, I don't see it going down. Not when coaches are so valuable to winning. I mean, look at the difference between having a Franchione and a Saban. Look at the difference between, I mean, even Coach Owen Less. I mean, Dana versus, oh my gosh, I forgot.
Major?
Major.
Well, we don't know the difference between Dana and Major. I mean, Dana's got to win first before you say that. I understand the perception, and that's a whole different deal, leaving a Power 5 to a non-Power 5. But I don't think it's crazy to say that there are going to be schools who say, you know what, we're going to – because they're the ones who do hand out the contracts. And what could happen is a $5 million coach could turn into a $2.5 million coach potentially. And they may say, hey, you know what? We're not going to get into this war of a bidding war for these, but we're not going to let agents push us and push us and push us. We've got a number that we're comfortable with, and we may need to stay strong to that. We could see some of that, especially if the number of suitors goes down, which sounds like it's possible.
Well, not at the highest level.
Yeah, I think it depends on the school.
Not the highest level.
Because you're telling me, if like you mentioned Dabo and Saban, let's say I don't know. Let's say Florida becomes available. I don't know. Dan Mullen doesn't work out. I don't think the money will be coming from the football school, the football team, or their budget. I think if Dan Mullen would get fired, a big money booster at Florida will be pushing for it. They'll pay for it, and then, I don't know, the next hot name that's out there, they'll use the same money to pay for him, and the school will be like, hey, the president, the AD, be like, you want to make this move? Pay for it, and we'll be glad to fire Dan Mullen if you're willing to pay for it. I think a lot of that stuff is being pushed by people who aren't really decision makers at the school, but they're the decision makers because they have all the money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's going to be awfully difficult.
The haves and have-nots.
To change that coach's deal. It's going to be almost impossible.
The haves and have-nots are going to really – I mean, the middle class is going to get – could get wiped out here depending on what takes – and you know what? And he even said it. Hey, even with – for example, even with football going on, it's not going to matter because like Conference USA and these smaller conferences that are non-Power 5 – they're going to get whacked because they're not going to have fans in the stands and their TV deals aren't that strong. So you're going to see the middle class of college football is going to really start to erode, at least from a non-Power 5 standpoint, because they're not going to have that revenue coming in for TV. So where's it going to come from? A full year of not having an $840,000 TV deal amongst, 10 teams? That's nothing.
Mm-mm.
And no tickets?
Well, I fully believe we're going to see football, and we're going to see fans in the stands. I think that as we go along this summer, even in August, you're going to be seeing baseball. You're going to be seeing fans in the stands in baseball. I think you're starting to see a smattering of it, if I saw correctly, at soccer, and you're starting to see it at Korean baseball. A smattering of fans.
No, those are sex dolls.
Well, those too. But wait, what attracts fans? Sex dolls.
Yeah, fair.
Okay, that's what attracts fans at a stands. So I think it's a brilliant move, even though it cost the South Korean soccer team $100,000 fine?
I think it's $100,000. Yeah,
$100,000 fine, the largest fine in their history, just because they accidentally put sex dolls in the stands.
Notice what they were when they were placing them in the seats.
Well, I think they had to clothe them. Once they're clothed, you can't tell. Once they're clothed and you got the colors, the team colors on, they just look like any other doll. Hey, at least they didn't have the ones.
What?
At least they didn't have the ones with the mouth, the big circle mouth.
Yes.
Yeah, the blow-up dolls.
Yeah, those. Those would have been, I think, even more obvious than the hot ones, the expensive ones.
The hot ones.
If you're going to do that and get charged.
The hot ones.
Well, if you're going to do that and get charged, why not just, throw the ones with the big circle mouth out there? You know what I mean?
I would, maybe we say the anatomically correct ones, not the,
not the hot ones.
Not the hot ones.
Well, I mean, you got some dolls that are nasty.
Yeah.
Five, but then you got the hot ones.
Look, you don't want a five out there in the stands, right?
Okay.
In real life, the cameras don't focus on the fives. They go to the hot ones. And
okay, though.
Honestly, that Alabama fan that married and they had the baby with the sex doll.
Right.
Did you not even did it not cross your mind at any time? She's too hot for him.
Actually, no. I just thought, this is weird. But it never crossed my mind that, man, she's out of his league.
That dude was way out of his league.
Because she's not a she. So I was like, man, that's weird, man. But I never thought to myself, she could do better.
No, she could.
She can't do better.
Listen, he didn't buy that doll, he could have never had that doll.
Of course,
Dale, you watch a lot of that's true.
Well, yes,
Dale,
that's true.
You watch a lot of movies. She could have had Ryan Gosling.
I have seen that movie. Yes, but you know what? Even in that town where Ryan Gosling, I mean, was the most attractive person in that town, in real life, he's still the weird dude who's with the sex doll.
Right. Right. No matter what. Even if he was Ryan Gosling, he'd be like, dude, really? But I could see those two together.
Well, I think you're taking it to real life. Any guy can buy any slob of a guy can buy an attractive doll. So I don't think of she's too hot for him because he bought her. It's the same way a guy, buys favors from a real life woman. She's probably too hot for him, but He bought the time. That's the same.
It's the same thing with dolls.
An older, maybe less attractive man marries a younger woman, and it's usually because he has a lot of money. I mean, why would the sex doll be any different from a real woman in that situation?
It's not any different. It's really not. I mean, she was like, really? This is what I ended up with?
No, she doesn't think. Because
she doesn't think.
No,
she had a baby. And she was holding the baby.
She didn't have a baby because if that doll
she wanted that baby.
If that doll could think and feel and act, that guy would come home from work and he would see her head in the oven because of her life.
Baby.
He would be murdered because I've already seen how this works. When these robots, and I'm assuming maybe it's just the difference between sex doll and a robot, but I know a robot would kill him if, and I know that from Westworld.
Ex Machina? I know it from Ex Machina, too.
Ex Machina is really, is a fun movie to watch.
Yeah, and that dude's no Oscar Isaac either.
No.
No, he's not the dude. He doesn't look like the dude from the movie.
How about the dance scene is one of the craziest out of nowhere scenes I've ever seen in a movie where, like, what in the hell is going on here?
Just a robot, hot robot dancing, Lance.
Getting some robot, mm-hmm. That's all.
But Oscar Isaac, too, he's like, you know what? I can dance a little bit.
Robots need some, too.
Write a scene in there where I'm dancing with a robot.
You sure? Robots. Why are you C-blocking them?
I'm not...
Why are you C-blocking... Hey, by the way, Dell, you never mentioned the fluffer bomb on John.
Oh, yeah. What? John Clay Wolf called John the fluffer to his show, and John was like, yeah, I am. I was like, what? You are? You are the fluffer to the John Clay Wolf show, John?
I said what he said.
Yes, you did. I don't think you heard him, but that's what he said. He said, "You're the fluffer to my show," and like you're like, "Yeah, I am."
Me and Dell were both behind the scenes going, "Excuse me,
excuse me,
you got to shut that down, John."
I didn't hear
you
that.
You just can't agree to stuff when he says stuff like that.
I didn't hear that part. If I'd have heard it, trust me, I'd have got him. It's 9:40. Oh man, we're late. 9:46 ESPN 97.5. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5 is your home for sports talk. And now we're more talk with less commercials.
Are you serious?
Oh, it's true.
It's damn true.
Houston's only FM sports station. ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, it's 9:49 on ESPN 97.5. 713-780-3776. If you'd like to get in here, you're more than welcome to do that. 713-780-3776. Did you see the Nationals ring?
Yes, that stupid ass baby shark is on there.
Oh my god, they've got to live with that forever. The baby shark on there. Oh my gosh. And Howie Kendrick. Yeah, we beat him even though they cheated. Yeah. Okay.
Wait. Howie Kendrick said that?
Howie Kendrick said.
I'm sorry. Show me the receipts on the 2019 cheating.
Even with them cheating, they still. They still, what was it?
Oh, God.
Even with them cheating, they still couldn't take us out.
I told you this. There was a guy at Game 7. I was up in the upper deck watching because them tickets were no joke. And there was a guy dressed in a shark outfit and just, and it was great watching people abuse him for the first six-ish innings. And then he was unbearable after that.
Okay, turn that off. Okay, let me ask you this question. How many people are irate and disgusted and just totally anti-Lance Armstrong, and yet don't give a rat's ass that their baseball team cheated for years?
I listened to a podcast, and they got after one Bill Simmons. He was Lance cheated, and then he was really upset with him because he didn't. He was treating people like crap. I was like, maybe you should take a step back, because a couple of your favorite players are Big Poppy and Manny Ramirez.
Right.
So maybe you're commenting on cheating when you don't have this, when you don't come that strong about them, maybe we should take what you say with a grain of salt.
Isn't that the most frustrated thing, though?
Yes.
Is it people who are so hypocritical? That's the most frustrating thing about all this.
Yeah. No. If you're morally outraged by Lance Armstrong and you're a Boston fan or a Yankee fan or a Dodger fan, and you and you're morally outraged by Lance Armstrong, you can suck it. You are a POS because you're so hypocritical. Our team did not. There was not one guy that did steroids in the 2017 season.
Okay, cool.
Not one guy.
Not that's been proven.
Pardon me?
Not that's been proven.
Did you see them? I mean, they were all like trying to go clubbing.
Let me tell you what I don't do with baseball anymore. Say that nobody on my team is doing something. I don't really think that anybody on any team should say definitively that they know that their player, their favorite player in their team, is not doing something. I'm not sure baseball's that sport.
I know definitively. Our team did not do steroids in 2017. Okay? Banged a few trash cans. Whatever. Whatever. But them cheating Dodgers, that 80% of their team was doing the steroids. The Yankees in 2009 won with Alex Rodriguez. Manny Ramirez, Big Poppy, both. Oh, Manny served a suspension for steroids. And yet you're going to be morally outraged by Lance Armstrong. Suck it. Suck
wow.
it.
John just told you to suck it, people.
Yeah.
Nobody that's listening now really has to, but other people.
No, I am so sick of these people, I can't even tell you. I mean, what a bunch of POSs. Mm-hmm. And I just have to mute everybody. There was a guy on there last week. Just shut up. How about Alex Bregman tweets out, "Hey, happy Memorial Day to all." And man, can't thank them. All of those who died for our freedom. Thank you so much on this Memorial Day. And the cheating comments by a-holes. I mean, and you're still cheating, and you're still a cheater. And your freedom to cheat. They made sure they died for your freedom to cheat. Oh my gosh! What you are a loser in life if you're coming back on someone talking about Memorial Day and thanking veterans, and you're coming back on them cheating. You're the worst. You're the scum. You're scum. You're scum on the bottom of my shoe.
You know what? I'm actually, this is the
I don't
first
have scum
time.
On the bottom of my shoe, though.
I went to go check and see if Daryl was still getting. Well, there's one. You're not welcome in China, you buffoon. Daryl put something out about watching Platoon. For Memorial Day, I watched Platoon for the first time with my kids last night. They had lots of great questions. While I'm sure there are many inaccuracies, my dad always said the jungle scenes most closely resembled his experience in Vietnam. I also break down every time at this scene. And he put a picture up there. And for the most part, there was only 14 comments. But for the most part, it was basically right in line with what he tweeted about. Until you get to the very end, and here come the obligatory Chinese replies that talk about, you know, Daryl's... Yeah, it's just not nice. And his Instagram still gets some of that. But eventually that's kind of gone away. It used to be every time Daryl had an Instagram post, It would be filled with nothing but Chinese fans or bots or whatever it was, just annihilating his Instagram feed. Lance McCullers told us on the Off-Script podcast that he said every day, I think he's kind of checked out of Twitter, where he doesn't even check Twitter anymore. He said no matter what he tweets or says, he's going to get, you know, 700 comments a day on social media that he's a cheater and they're cheaters. He said it's unstoppable. There's no end in sight. And he said it makes social media just, you know, kind of useless.
I saw, and I tweeted it out yesterday, Last Full Measure. It is awesome.
Yeah, I saw you tweet that out. What's it about?
It's about Bill Pitzenberger. And they had Operation Abilene, and it was one of the bloodiest Vietnam battles and one of the worst days in Vietnam history. And this guy couldn't have been a bigger hero. And 32 years later, they were fighting to get him his Medal of Honor, and there was all kinds of politics and stuff involved. So it's really, really good. Really good. It was a perfect movie for Memorial Day. Perfect.
Yeah, I'll check it out. I watched I put my dad on Life's Too Short, which is kind of the other direction. I didn't really go in that direction. I went more to Warwick Davis and got him watching some Warwick Davis. So that's a different direction that you can go on television also. That's
another direction. You can go one of two ways.
Yeah. Yeah. That one's a lot different. By the way, Justin Allen, the trainer who's working with – he's from Houston. It's working with James Harden right now. He's going to join us this week on the show. And we'll find out a little bit about James's workouts and everything that's going on right now. He's the one responsible for some of those workouts this offseason. And he had some very positive things to say about James and his workout in the article on The Athletic that Kelly Iko did. It's a really good article. Kelly did a nice job with it. So we will visit with him later on in the week. We'll go ahead and set that up today. But very good to find out that James Harden is grinding away and working. And in this article, the conversation is the idea that James isn't a worker in the offseason or doesn't work out is just a flawed narrative anyway, that he is. And then I know Justin talks about different types of body types. James has a certain type of body type that will throw some people. Because, you know, James is probably an ectomorph, and he's got a little different body type. Some guys have different. Marshall Faulk is one of those guys. But they said, you want to talk about one of the least imposing guys you'd ever see in a locker room. And yet, when he's on the football field, killer. Because he just has a body type that doesn't, you know, that doesn't, is not going to be the beach body type of workout body. And I think that's his idea with James, is that James may have, you know, may not ever be a 5% body fat guy.
No, James is thick. Mm-hmm. James is, I mean, he's just, James is going to be, that's his body, whatever. When James is done, I could see James ballooning up 240, 250,
tell you
260.
What. If the Rockets can send me a pizza at some point in the next day or two before we do this interview, I think this could end up going really well, this interview. Or cookies.
So,
or pizza followed by cookies.
They're going to get your address. They're going to get your address.
Not the Texans, the Rockets.
No, I know. They got to call and get your address. That's great. Oh, man. I'll tell you this. The pizza in the – man, what's the name of the place? In the Post Oak Hotel. Have you ever eaten in that? There's a little restaurant, and it's not expensive. It's like a sports bar restaurant kind of place.
I know you weren't in the Post Oak this weekend.
No. Ooh, Tillman ain't happy about that, I can tell
you. I don't
you.
Think he is happy about
that. I can tell you that right now. Not happy about that. My buddy was staying there when it happened. Did you hear what the dude did?
He shot the guy was in critical condition.
In the morning, they're standing out front. Guy goes, smokes a cigarette. He comes back, and he's flailing his arms, and he's talking, you know. And this guy just pulls out a gun and shoots him. And he's on the ground, and he shoots him. And then he goes up to his room.
Guy from Georgia shot a guy from Louisiana.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was SEC related or not. Investigators still looking into it.
Hey, listen, he just went to his room. He didn't run. He didn't jump in the car and take off. He went up to his room.
Yeah, he thought he was at the Continental in John Wick, because that's a safe harbor. You can shoot people outside, then walk into the hotel safe harbor. Just, hey, man. A little confused.
Is it John Wick? No.
Is it worth watching John Wick, by the way? Because the reviews have always been pretty good.
If you like just flat-out action, yeah. I mean, there's sure some plot holes, but yeah.
By the third one, though, it's
a little
just
ridiculous.
Like,
are there any Warwick Davises on it?
No, there are not. No little people, from what I remember.
Not interested.
Does everything have to have a little person now for you?
Apparently. By the way, it's time for Lance to leave, I think.
Beat it, Lance. Are you beating it?
Are you leaving?
No answer. You got called the fluffer today.
All right, are you going to do our video at 11?
Oh, hey, you know, it'd be cool as if we – maybe I will, maybe I won't. I'll reach out to Brandon.
Okay.
Maybe we'll do it Wednesday.
That's great. Okay. All right. Let me know. Let me know.
Yes,
all
I can do it. I can do it
11. ESPN.
I'll see you at 11.
97.5.
ESPN 97.5.